we have there that political parties must record all their income and expenditure. Sorry.
Excuse me, in case I missed something. I think that the bullet point below full or limited disclosure was it dealt with. The one on different thresholds for individuals and corporate donors.
I thought I dealt with it just before I left. We were saying that thing must come out totally.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's no differentiation.
Oh, yes. Oh, great. Sure. That was my view too.
Yeah. No, we said it must come out totally. There's no differentiation. Bullet point 19, obligation on political parties. It's to record their income and expenditure. Provide that report to the accounting authority, the IEC, whoever it is. Yes, ma'am.
What I'm trying to find out, Chairperson, 19, what essentially does it deal with? Is it saying this donor money or this donated money that we've disclosed, we must then also deal with how we have used it, have it audited, and submitted to the IEC over and above the normal IEC money that we disclosed?
Yeah. That's what it's saying, but we must take a decision to be wanted because our submitters, you'll recall there was an argument about capping and non-capping, and then there's an argument that says, but once the money gets into my account as Party X, outside of certain no-go areas, I should really not be babysat on it. And if that's the prevailing view, then it means that all we make sure is that you declare all in cash and in kind, and it should be sufficient. And all cash and kind is disclosed somewhere and taken. I'm saying this was to deal with that matter, but if we think that whole 19 is covered somewhere else, then members must say that. That's what I'm saying. Let's look at 19. What is the view on 19? That was the spirit of it. But if that spirit is covered, we can remove it.
Yeah, I think the point I want to make, comrade, is that as for the IEC money, we'll do the normal audit thing that we always do. But with the donated money that goes into the accounts that we are using currently outside the IEC money, I think the principle is disclosure. And I think that's where it will end. Exactly.
Okay, honorable members, we're happy with that one. Because we'll still wait for exactly where and how it must be disclosed. But the principle is all monies that you have received, cash and kind, you just need to disclose it. And we can argue about how does the public get access to it. That is what I'm hearing Gordy to be saying. Honorable Matthew.
So given that political parties are disclosing to the IEC for now or wherever, right? And then we say that these private donations we're going to report twice a year or twice during an election year, and we're just going to report on what we receive. We don't need to do income and expenditure stuff. On private, on the same point 19, right? So we're talking about direct funding of political parties only, right? So that cash money we get. So we're obligated to disclose it to the IEC, right? And then we're going to wait until the DA tells us on whether the public disclosure and whatever, right? So that's not that. And then twice in a year, we are going to report, during a campaign year, we are going to report on what donations we receive, cash in kind, not necessarily income and expenditures. That's what we say. Okay, I'm in agreement. Understood.
Is there Honorable Fick?
Sorry, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks. I just want clarification on that. That's not what I heard. Now, you saying, if I'm clear here, is that 19 must be removed. Yes, that's right. That we leave it. Oh, okay, no. Okay. No, fine. So Chair, I would say I would support the suggestion that was made by yourself that 19 be removed, because the money's coming in anyway. We're recording, we're accounting for the money. So therefore now, if you're still in a baby, the expenditure and how the money's spent, I think that's just taking it a little bit too far. Thanks.
All that, I think Honorable Matesi is saying, we should be saying, we said annually initially in a normal year, and twice in the elections year. Okay, that's what we're all saying, isn't it? Yeah, and where it gets disclosed, that we'll argue after we receive it. You got that? So you'll replace 19 to read that. Thank you so much. So we can tick 19? Thank you. Point number 20. Excuse me. Who are we saying should not be allowed to donate directly to political parties? That's the question that we're asking. Who shouldn't donate? And we've got the list there. We can either go bullet by bullet and tick it as we go along, and then we move on. Foreign governments and foreign agencies, we're ticking. Tick. Foreign foundations? Tick.
No.
Question mark. Yeah. All right. Okay, we'll come back to all the question marks just now. State-owned enterprises and state orders, I think we're ticking. State lottery, we're ticking. Proceeds of crime, we're ticking. Foreign individuals and foreign donors. You want to put a question? Oh, that question mark. You want to? Okay, we'll come back to it. Let's put a question mark for now. All political party funding must be channeled to the party and not to the individual. Question mark. Let's come back to that one. You agree on it? All political must go.
To Lindley myself, it goes to the party, even if I'm within the party or an internal party, you know, like party things. It mustn't come to me as an individual, but it must go to the party.
Yes, I understand that. That's fine. But we are dealing with donations to political parties. If some individual wants to give a donation to Dr. Fick because he wants to enhance his career, he's not making a donation to a political party. And I made the point this morning, Dr. Fick will have to declare it as income tax for tax purposes. Does that fall within the ambit of the bill? I understand what we're trying to achieve. We are saying if somebody makes a donation for a political party, it should be to the party and not to an individual. That's fine. I accept that. And I understand what we want to achieve, but I don't know how to formulate that.
The individual, the last one.
Let's take Maseko and come back to Singh, because you were the one that raised it. Maybe you clarify and then Singh can come.
Just on the Honourable Mulder, if it comes to an individual for intra-party campaign or something, do you say yes, it must go to the individual? Yeah, that's what I meant. Thank
you. Say yes, huh?
No.
No.
Yeah.
I don't want an individual to give money to, I don't want somebody to give money to an individual to foster what's happening in a party political sense. That's a donation to the party. I don't want to ask. I agree with that. That's fine.
So we can tick then bullet point 19. If there's a need for us to put whatever concerns you have, Honourable Mulder, we can always introduce it at some point. It's 20. We're taking the last bullet point. That's what I meant. The last bullet point on 20.
It gets confusing, Chair. You know why? Because it says all political party funding must be channeled and not to individuals. So it goes without saying that it has to go to a political party. So I think your experts over there, you just need to frame it properly that political leaders inside political parties must not receive funding and it must go to a political party, like political leaders for whatever. Instead of saying all political party funding, like political leaders should not receive funding for campaigning purposes, it must be channeled through the political party.
We understand in the sentiment, you guys are trying to do the English for us.
For political stuff.
Okay.
Just on page 20. For the drafters, I think that they need also to be consistent. I know that there's two that we put question marks. But you see, for instance, in 16 they talk of national lottery, here is state lottery. Proceedings of crime, they're proceeding from crime. So I just want us to be consistent with what you write. So mustn't it? Because it's almost the same topic and the same prohibited donation. Thank you.
Absolutely. So we put consistency. Let's go then to, are we prohibiting foreign foundations to political parties? We're just dealing with that one now, and then we'll do the other one. Let's start right at the end, Comrade Kodi, and then followed by Singh and followed by Milner.
Well, the two things, Comrade Chair. The first one was to say, but why do we have 16 and 20 separately?
Talking about two different animals. 16 is the multi-party fund, 20 is directly to political parties.
All right, okay, thank you. okay. Comrade Chair, I think I've been a bit consistent on this one, that the issue on foreigners, whether they are in the form of a government or they are individuals or it's a company or it's a foundation or it's a trust, I think from where I'm standing, I would want that we discourage those unless they go to number 16, where they donate the money to the multi-party fund. I will repeat myself, because I think with some comrades and some people, we used to attend meetings hosted by some foundations from the Netherlands, being a fund from Parliament that encompasses a number, especially right-wing parties, but maybe it doesn't matter whether right-wing or left-wing, but in this particular instance, we always had the conservative. But it was a fund from the Parliament, and they were using that to try and get political parties in Southern Africa come together, have workshops, have this, that. So it is a foundation, or whatever they call it, but it is funded from Parliament. And it's for political parties. And you could see and get a sense that there is a particular outcome and particular outlook that they would want you to have. So I'm saying they are not, for me, they are not merely neutral donors. If you look at an individual or the foundations of the likes of George Soros, for example, and how he's trying to remake the world. I see even his native country, Hungary, they don't want him there. You want to not have those kind of things. If he wants to donate to the multi-party fund, better, because then all of us are going to use that money in the country. But if it goes to, so for me, the foreign thing, national security, sovereignty, I think for me, that's the bedrock of it all. Thanks.
Honorable Singh, followed by Honorable Mulder.
Thank you, Chair. You see, I think when we say prohibited donations, now we must just, we know donations are cash or in kind, right? There are organizations which we've been getting support from, right? Who support programs. They don't support party agent training of councillors, training of mayors, They'll have a weekend together, they'll call you, you address them, and they'll bring somebody from University of Stellenbosch, University of Cape Town, to train these people administratively. What is wrong with that? If it's a foundation based abroad that's supporting this kind of training using local people. And if a party declares that Hans Siddle Foundation provided training to our councillors, training to party agents or whatever, should we say now they are obliged to give it to a central fund so it gets distributed? Even Parliament gets money for particular programs. You look at departments, every department on the balance sheet you'll see donations received for particular programs and purposes, not for elections. They don't give you a cent for elections, but to support programs, you get money. Now why should we be saying no to that kind of thing?
Honourable Mulder.
I'm still thinking, Chip.
Kobis.
Chairperson, I'll believe that the key point here is that these organizations be allowed to donate, but not to individuals, but to the party, because the party will declare at the end of the day. So, and there have been organizations that have been donating, for particular projects. And I would feel, as long as the party is able to disclose it in line with the law that is set. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Bongo.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. It's a bit unfortunate that we need to say these things every time, now and again, repeat once. So I'm trying to get a different either terminology or English, so we're able to understand what we want to achieve generally. Because I think, Chair, what we're trying to achieve and what we're fighting, honorable members, we want the multi-party democracy of South Africa to be self-reliant. Is it a good term, Honorable Mulder? Self-reliant. At the center of self-reliance, it would be, among others, making sure that you get to have South Africans to be themselves in their own fiscus, carrying the burden of funding a democracy in South Africa. So we're fighting for self-reliance. You know what, we might have seen what happened to Muammar Gaddafi and his foreign funding. So what we're saying is that what we've seen all over Africa, these monies will come in the form of those workshops, will come in the form of some academia who will come here and want to in the main pursue their views, their foreign policies and so on. Obviously they start very low, honorable thing. The first meeting will be the academic, the third meeting they'll get to bigger stuff. So what we're trying to cap is that we want to be in charge of our own democracy at this point. I sympathize with what Honorable Mulder raised earlier on, that in 1994 these things were there, the democracy in South Africa is developing. We're 20-something years old, we've got to do things differently, we've got to learn from whatever has happened in the past. So I think we need at all costs to discourage these foreign foundations, because their interest in the main is to make sure that they push their foreign policies through our countries, they push their foreign interests through the political parties in South Africa. So I think we need to just discourage them. Thanks.
Honorable Fick.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. It's a pity that we want to discourage foreigners or foreign investors or foreign donors. We then probably should just close our Department of International Relations and Cooperation, because if we don't want to work with the outside world, then we're going to have a problem. We need the outside world the same way the outside world needs us. So we mustn't only look at, Chairperson, the concerns and any harm. In our view, we don't believe that there's any harm that can be done with a donation. Wanting to refuse the donation because we are concerned about what these other countries are trying to do within our country, I think it's just been a little bit short-sighted. With respect, I say this. I don't mean to be. I think we could benefit from it the same way other countries can benefit from us. So I think we should rather encourage working with foreign countries rather than discourage. Maybe when we look at who we work with, that might be somewhere where we must probably consider. But I think in terms of working with foreign countries, I don't think we can work in isolation. So I would support and not discourage foreign donors. Thank you.
Again, talking as Vincent, not as the chairperson. You know, I don't believe there's a free lunch. I really don't believe there's a free lunch. Especially in the arena that we play, where we influence policy and everything else. I'm failing to see somebody saying, I'm giving you this money just because I like the color of your uniform. It's black, green, and gold, or blue and white, or whatever. I'm almost sure that there's something that comes out of it. That's just my own personal view. I hear what Honorable Singh is saying in terms of helping, but then if you are interested in developing skills at this level, shouldn't we then be saying give it to everybody that is in that arena? Why must you give it to the IFP or to the ANC only? I'm just putting that point because I hear what Honorable Singh is saying, but people come and help our councillors or our municipal managers or whoever ours is, the 15 political parties. If the motivation is that you are to help, I'm just arguing that is there a free lunch, Honorable Singh, when they come and help the Singh party? Are they helping the Singh party as benevolent somebody, or are they helping the Singh party hoping that when Singh party gets in there, he's nice? That's all that I'm asking personally. Because this is going directly to political parties now. It's not going to the central fund. The central fund, we argue, is on the other side. That says, but what's the problem? That's all that I'm asking. And we're talking now specifically about, because that's how it was brought up in the morning, the foreign foundations, but it could be, because we've done with corporates and so on. So that was just my view. I'm not sure, Ronaldo, if you thought about it. It's now, we basically talk about the second bullet point. Do we leave it in or do we take it out? I think that's the question that we're asking.
Can I just say with regard to foreign foundations? Nowhere in the world, really in practice nowadays, parties work in isolation. For example, Democratic Alliance, if I'm not mistaken, is part of an organization, Liberal International. The ANC may have some ties with Social International or something. IFP may have ties with constitutional, Social Democrats, for example. So those institutions or parties may have institutions that are on the same policy wavelength with parties that have the same kind of philosophical thinking. Are we saying that we don't want any interaction in that sense? Let's turn it around. A party in Ireland invite one of us to come and say, tell us about your constitutional process and how you got through the CODESA process. how would we react if they say, no, we're not allowed to do that? They don't want to do that because they don't want anything to do with any foreign input, if I might put it that way. So it's not a simple thing. It's not an easy thing. I understand the sentiment that we want to do our own thing. But I also don't want us to have an isolationist kind of approach, that we don't want to have anything to do with anybody out there. We may lose help in a sense. I don't want people to influence and distort what we are trying to achieve. But don't let us isolate ourselves completely in terms of what's happening in the rest of the world.
Maseko and then Godi.
Chairperson, maybe let's continue pondering on that and leave it for the next round, just for the reason, so that we try and think deeper on it and how to go about.
Remember, the next round is the first.
Yes.
Because that's when we're going to get IEC and get Treasury and this matter, and I think there was one more. So when you say the next round, it's going to be on the agenda of the first. Honorable Godi.
Yeah, no, I would have no problem with the suggestion to call it off. We used to do that with raw food in the villages. Put it somewhere, sometimes come back and it will be nice and ready. Except to say, I think it would be important to, just to keep the focus a bit, the issue here is about a donation to the political party. I don't see it as isolationism in terms of have no contacts, have no dealings, have no relations. I think it should, it should be looked at purely from that from that angle. We can talk to, in fact, we don't even need to talk to the other forms of relationships that parties may have. Absolutely irrelevant to what we're doing. We're merely talking about donations, financial and in kind, to a political party. I think that's, let's just keep that narrow focus, because if we widen it, then it becomes something else and we get entangled into things that we may not be able to get out of. And yet, our mandate is very narrow and very focused. Thank you.
What we're saying is, taking all these things into consideration, we'll bed it down finally on the first. That's what we're saying? Thank you very much. So we're done with 19. There's no other prohibitions that we can think about now. No. 20? No, I'm saying we're done with it. And 20. 19 and 20 we're done. I apologize, sorry. 21, sorry, Honorable Maseko. 21, I think there was total agreement. We don't have to discuss it. We're saying that the managing agent will be the IEC, and of course, that's why we're calling them. All the concerns that they raised about additional capacity and so on, we will finalize on the 21st. So we are saying that there will not be another management organization other than the IEC, and that is what we're going for now. That's 21. 22?
Yeah, 21.
Yes, sir.
Just, 21, okay, sorry, yeah,
fine. Right. We are now moving to 22, which is powers and enforcement entity. Here we're talking about if the EFF breaks the law or whoever breaks the law, who should do it? Should there be sanctions, 5 years in jail, that type of, that's really what we're talking about, only for those that have now been found to have, not even to be found to have broken the law, but suspected, because sometimes you will have a prosecutor and then there must be a final arbitrator. Just so to help us, honorable members, so that when we have this discussion, it's focused. in the morning's discussion, we said, let's assume the IEC is the managing body. We declare to the IEC and so on. The IEC then gets a report from Party A with proof that Party B has infringed the law, whether they received donations or whatever the case, which was outside of the law. That IEC, whichever unit it is, must formulate the charge and take it to the electoral court, who will finally adjudicate, electoral court, finally adjudicate and issue the sanctions to separate the IEC being the prosecutor and the judge. That was the spirit in which it was said this morning. I'm not, let me come back to your point.
Oh yeah, it's a minor thing. I was looking at the bullet point number 1 and 2. So you need them to separate monitoring as well as inspection, or is monitoring not sufficient? Because I would imagine that if the inspection is about confirming, or if there's a complaint to confirm whether or not, which in terms of what you have just outlined, if there's need to confirm or challenge, that is what goes to the electoral court. So the IEC should rather monitor. I think it's a broad enough term to mean a variety of action that they may want to take. But once you put inspection per se as a word, then you need to think of instances where inspection must be done, to what end. It cuts no cheese and opens no heaven, but I'm just saying, you know.
I think you're right. Let's take out inspection. Unless the technical experts are saying inspection is different to monitoring. Very briefly, what is...
Sorry, Chair. The monitoring is analyzing the material that is given to you. Inspection is going out because you've got a complaint, and inspection powers means you want to see the books, you want to now see whether or not they've received money from an irregular source. So there's a power of calling or subpoenaing books or going to the offices and looking at the books. So without that power, you can never formulate a recommended sanction, because you don't have the information that you require in order to recommend the sanction. Then that goes to the electoral court. The electoral court then might well call for evidence and proof and the like. But definitely you would need a power beyond just simply monitoring.
Got it?
Yeah. That is why I raised the point that if there's a complaint and evidence must be produced, I thought that is at the point of the electoral court. Because if the IEC will do the inspection, go come to you and look for records and take records, then the process of going to the electoral court, I think then gets a bit fudged, because otherwise then the IEC becomes an investigative entity once the complaint is laid. I just am not so sure, especially in the light of his explanation, whether at a process level that is how you want it to be, that if the APC goes and complains against the TA, then the IEC should go to the TA, get their records, and then go to the electoral court. Would it be how we want it? Well, it might be something that may still need to be thought through, especially maybe from a legal point of view. I'm not sure, but I was just flagging that out.
All right. Again, we are seeing the IEC, we can raise that point as to exactly how will you make sure that those that contravene the law are brought to book. Just the practice of how you do it, and we can take that. I think so. Is that all right, Honourable Members? Prof?
Chairperson, it begins on knowing what is it that they do currently. Yes, we're drafting a new law. Perhaps that information would assist us to know what is it that they do currently in regard to the funds that are given to parties. And when you go to the electoral court, it will look at a plethora of issues. What is it that the IEC did? So for me, taking out inspection and all that, and leaving monitoring, might not cover the whole spectrum of things. And because when IEC is taking the issue to the electoral court, it must have a case on hand. There must be a case. You know, because the electoral court will always ask, what is it that you did? Asking from the IEC, what is the case that you have in regard to a particular party? I don't want to say I'm talking from experience, but I have a bit of experience of what the electoral court does, because I've attended the case where, you know, they really grill the IEC itself to find out what is it that you did. But thank you, Jefferson. I think.
All right, we can always just get total clarity when the IEC comes, but let's leave it in for now. We'll take it out on the first if needs be. Happy with that? Thanks, Comrade Scotty. Number 23 talks about the IEC reports to Parliament. We said it's already covered in Section 8, and we're happy with that. That's what we said this morning. Total accounting, not just accounting for what they do now, but accounting also for the multi-party democracy fund. That's what we are saying. It's there. Currently, it might just say for the fund. If we need to add the multi-party, we'll add that. Are we okay with that? Thank you so much. The role of the Auditor General. I mean, all we can say there is that the Auditor General must be the external auditor of the IEC, which they are currently, isn't it? Do we have to reinforce it? No. Take it out. Yeah. We're taking it out. Okay? But we're taking it for the sake of going forward. The role of the Electoral Court, we've just discussed that now, that they will be the final arbiters of any disputes and or discrepancy and or alleged criminal activity that has taken place.
Chair.
Yes, Baba.
Do we keep it the way it is, which is to confirm sanctions recommended by the IEC, or the way you are explaining it now?
I thought it was the way we were explaining it, because there was an argument this morning that they can't be the referee and the player. So this is just me saying that they should be the final arbiter and not just rubber stamp what the IEC says.
Sure.
Yeah. Are we happy with that approach? And I think that's what they do anyway. Courts will never just rubber stamp. They will. Yeah. All right. Moving to 26. The actual sanctions that or possible sanctions, or minimum sanctions, there could be more as we go along. Forfeiture of unlawful donations, if that is true. Tick on that.
Yeah. Isn't it from the Act, the current...
Oh, are those from the Act?
It's the current provisions. We just repeat the current provisions.
Are they covered in the current provisions?
Yes, they're covered, but, for example, one of the submissions was that there should also be suspension disqualification of political parties. So there was a distinction between funds and then a sanction then of disqualifying a political party or suspending a political party from participation. And the question was then opened as to whether it should include those kinds of political sanctions.
No. What we're saying as it stands here covers. If you wanted the disqualification of a seat, you should have put it in and we would argue it. But what I'm sensing is that members are saying these three should be at least the minimum.
What are they?
Chair.
Comrade Gordy and then Prof.
Two things. One, currently I don't know if the current provisions in terms of contravention are not sufficient, because the only thing we're adding will be the multi-party democracy fund, okay, and those who may get money and not disclose. I see, but I think what also arises. I'm not sure if in law you then define those kind of sentences. At what point do you get a forfeiture of the unlawful donated funds? At what point does it lead to suspension? At what point does it lead to an administrative fine? So that we are guaranteed of consistency in terms of application. And I'm not sure if I'm just thinking politically, legally, it is not an issue.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, it's almost like minimum sentences if you look at the law that it can't be. But let's discuss that with the IEC when they come. I mean, to say, look, our view is that you should be consistent. If Party A and Party B have committed the same crime, there can't be any mitigating. If it means taking his money or forfeiting his next tranche, you forfeit it. We will raise it and see if it's legally applicable. But I think that's the sentiment. From?
I think it's based on the premise that already the IEC would have done some groundwork. And I think we must leave them the bullets as they are, because something would have been done as a groundwork, and the IEC would have done it. Of course, they do it. Even currently, they do it. If you don't do your things or don't do your books well, they withhold funds until they are satisfied that you have done your books well. I'm sure Honorable Matthias will agree with me as the Treasurer General. I mean, from what I know, you know, because I've been in the process of submitting books to the IEC, until they are satisfied that you have satisfied all the requirements, then they will give you funds. So I think we must leave the bullets as they are, the minimum sentences.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Yeah, that might be true, but I think Honorable Gowdy is making a very good point here, is that you can't just say for a violation of the rules or the act that where do they go? It has to be for a specific, if they want to be consistent, then for a specific violation, then the sanction will be there. So I agree. Let it go to the IC. They're the ones that have done the necessary research, and we'll be guided by them. So I'll agree with that.
So we'll deal with that on the first. Yes. All right, we get to part 7, general provisions. Huh? 27 already, no? Yeah. And it says there is already currently regulations, which is section 10 of the Act. And of course, then it comes to the whole argument that we postponed from this morning, because it's in the regulations where we're going to say 90-10 or 50-50 or 70-40. So let's first go to bullet point one. Bullet point one is basically saying, because we're not going to put that back, because we're just, bullet point one is saying, can we export what is in the Act as it stands into the new Act? That's for bullet point one. Yes or no? Honourable Mulder.
Yes, if I understand, Mr. Chairperson, you're referring to the question of regulations, and that's section 10 of the current Act. I looked at section 10, I think you can use it exactly in the same fashion, except for one thing, The current Section 10 refers to a joint committee of the NAIC and National Council of Provinces. That will need to be changed to refer to an ad hoc committee or something. This committee is going to make those recommendations. If you say no, then we have to set up something new who has no idea what we've been doing up till now.
You're going to replace joint committee to be this committee that's going to be the authors of the regulations. That's what we're basically saying. So we're ticking the first bullet point. We had the whole fight about equity, proportionality, 90-10, that whole argument. We didn't even touch it this morning because we thought we'll leave it for now. Let's open it up, honorable members. Before we open it up, let me just indicate that I think it was two or three meetings ago, there was a request that we must get the breakdown of exactly what provinces are giving to political parties. The IEC had promised to do that, and Cindy and them had attempted to do that on their own. It didn't happen. What I did do today was to draft a letter through the speaker to ask for that information. Okay, so that information is not with us yet. That's the first thing that I wanted to say with you. We know what we get from the IEC. We know what we get from Parliament. We're not sure what we get from the provinces. And we're trying to get that. But we've drafted a letter, and hopefully Speaker will agree with me so that that can get sent out. And hopefully come the first, that information should be here, or long before the first, it should be here. So that's the first thing I wanted to say to you. As honourable members, that we haven't got the total information yet. Having said that, because I think that was what Honourable Singh had asked for at some point, without that information it makes it very difficult, because we don't know what is this thing that we started calling the third anima. Does it exist or doesn't it exist? So let me open it up, honourable members. What are we doing about bullet point 2 on 27? Anybody wants to? Do you want to go and have a dig at it now? What do we want to do? Mulder.
Good person. It's kind of late. I think a more purposeful discussion will be possible if we've got the information that we've asked. It'll make it easier to understand what are we exactly talking about. We know the broad spectrum of different views. We've canvassed it to a little extent, to a certain extent. But I would suggest, if possible, that if we can hold this in abeyance, perhaps until we have the information that we've requested, and take it then and come to some kind of a conclusion.
Honourable Gode, and then Honourable Bongo.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. I think there are two things we could immediately agree upon tonight, which is more, you know, on the outskirts of the substance of the discussion. One, if we could just in principle agree that we will review the 90-10 formula, it will be reviewed, so that it's either it becomes 89-11 or 8-20 or whatever, but cannot be sustained in its current form as a principle, and not go into what the outcome will be. Two, agree that section 236 talks about the National Assembly and provincial legislation, and also talk about equitable and proportional, and that we agree that proportional applies to both national and legislature. Equitable applies both to national and provincial legislatures as well. We can agree on those principles, just that. Then we can then come to the substance thereof when we are a little fresher than we are right now.
Honourable Bongo, followed by Honourable Maseko.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think Honorable Court, you must not take advantage that it's late and kowtow us. You know what it's kowtow, Chair?
No, we don't know.
You know when they are killing a goat, you know, they will call it, you kowtow it. Yeah. Let us not agree on any principle. I agree that let's put the matter in abeyance, subject to a full report that we have requested from province. Then we'll then deal with the matter at that stage. So now I agree with Honorable Mulder that it's very late, and let's suspend this matter, because from where I'm sitting, we've had a lot of discussion as we're proceeding since we've started, and a referral was made to 90-10, 90-10. And at some point we agreed with Honorable Mulder that we're not going to fight. At some point we said we're going to fight, so let's take a full picture, full view of what this animal is about, what is happening in provinces, and then we'll come back and apply our mind fully in the interest of all of us and in the interest of the South Africans. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was just thinking, I think the Honorable Bomber is right, that this item needs fresh mind. It really needs fresh mind. So, but also you've indicated the outstanding information. So, in the absence of that information, we will debate the 90-10, 85-15 or whatever, but without any basis, any, you know, base document that we could work from. So, I propose that if it means that also deferring it to the first, when we think that at that point we have received all the information that we want, including from the provinces, and then let's shift it to that.
I think, Honorable, I'm agreeing. I'm not going to pose on this one, but I think let's move from the premise that when we discuss it, we're going to discuss it with an open mind. I think that's what Gordy is probably saying, that you mustn't even come here and say to us, it's not negotiable. I'm saying in other words. So I'll make an undertaking that we must discuss this thing with an open mind when we've got all the facts before us. So it's not going to be put under the table. We'll discuss it with an open mind, bearing in mind that the two issues we're talking about is proportionality and equity or whatever. But we will do it with an open mind as soon as that information is made available. If it means we must have a lunchtime meeting, or whatever it is, we'll have it. Honorable Gordy, would that suffice as well?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Singh.
Yeah, no, Chair. That proposal is fine. But just to tell Honorable Bongo, we're not worried about the cows. We're worried about the fact that the roosters will start crowing while we're sitting here for us to get up. So we really need to go.
All right. In terms of the threshold that we're talking about, the minimum by which, because we said that is going to be in the regulations. And we must be able to at some point say, look, anything below X thousand rand is not disclosable. Do we want to debate the X thousand rand now? Can we also leave that one? I mean, I think the principle is, honorable members, when we come to the figure, the intention is that we're not disclosing it because that money is so insignificant it won't buy votes. It won't buy influence. So we need to find out what is it that is not so significant. But the principle is that we're going to have to put a rand value to it in the regulations. Is that what we're saying? Okay. And that one also we can bring, it's just about the rand value and motivate why you're saying 1 rand, why you're saying 100 rand, why you're saying 1 million rand. So that one deals with that last bullet point. We dealt with 28 already. That was the first agenda item. Michael? Yeah, that's them. Ticket? Short list, tick. I mean, short title. We said it must just incorporate now, not just IEC but private funding, and you guys can come with suggestions. Additional issues, regulation of the use of state resources for political party purposes. I think we said that it must be outlawed, didn't we? It's never going to be outlawed. It's not use, abuse, because it's unavoidable sometimes that you're going to use state resources, whether it's the stadium, whether it's the minister driving the car, but we're saying it can't be abused. I think that's what we should be saying, that we frown against, and abuse could be both ways. Either you're giving preference to one party to use the stadium, and then when the other party wants to use it, you're saying it's occupied purely just to deny them access, and those type of, or overcharge and so on. I don't know that we want to get into detail and say A, B, C, D. We should just be saying that this thing is an offense of some sort, even if it's in the spirit and not whatever. Honorable Mother, you want to say something to that? You have it. So the question is, do we want to put a one-liner in the, oh no, in the regulation? When we get to the regulations, we'll deal with it. Okay. The last one is barriers to entry. Now, this one was the one that the IEC was saying they do the balancing act, and other people saying, but it's by exclusion, and so on. And it must come into the regulation somewhere, isn't it? We agree it must be in the regulation. What form must it be in the regulation? Honorable Mulder?
Chairperson, I think, again, we should take our lead from the IEC to a certain extent. I don't know where they make provision for it at the moment. Is that in a different act or a different regulation or something? We'll have to look into that, but maybe we should talk to them. Because it's a balancing act again. You want people to encourage people to participate. For example, if you look at the entrance level when it comes to municipal elections, it's much lower, and you've got many more parties participating in that sense in local councils. But when it comes to provincial and national, it's a different ballgame altogether, and there are reasons for that. So maybe we should again engage with the IEC and hear how they regulate that and decide whether we should do that or with a partner what they do and see how we take it further.
Is there anything that is not in these, in version 3, either in headline or outstanding for the first that we'd like to include? Bearing in mind, honorable members, we're going to come back to 1 as the last agenda item on the first, the definitions and all those type of things, what is foreign, what is not foreign, and so on. Is there anything else, honorable members, that you think we must discuss very briefly so that the drafters can put it into version 4? Honorable Matthijs.
Well, I don't know where this is supposed to be, but the whole point of this was not necessarily to amend the Act, but it was to get more money, right? The whole point of this exercise wasn't necessarily to amend the Act. It was just a cover to get more money. Well, I'm saying. So when are we discussing the money issue? I know it's not necessarily going to go in the Act, but that's the biggest issue here, is are we supporting the increase or are we not supporting the increase? And how much?
Chairperson, I hear what my colleague says. That's part of it, but that's not all of it. A huge part of what we're doing is to regulate private funding, which at the moment doesn't exist in South Africa. And the only way to do that is by way of legislation. So that's part of the reality that we're pursuing.
Any other comments? This is not a money bill, so we're not going to say it must go up by 10 rand or 20 rand. Can we conclude this part of it? And once, as you say, once the regulation is done, then we give it to those that deal with money to see if it's affordable this year, affordable next year, affordable in 100 years, not affordable at all. But certainly, I think I want to echo the sentiment raised that there mustn't be ever an impression created that this whole exercise was just to make sure that political party A gets that. It really was about equitable, to make it fair, to make it transparent. It was Section 236 and those type of things. Let's not create the impression that we were groveling for our own pockets. I just thought I must raise that one. Cody.
Yeah, because I think if the issue was just money, you don't need a bill to increase funding from the IEC, do you? think let's not vulgarize the process. Let's leave it as is.
All right. That then will be the content for version 4. Honourable members, we have a program before us, and it hasn't changed. The only thing that we added to the program was that on the first, we were scheduled to only meet the IEC, I mean Treasury. We've now included the IEC. Okay. Cindy is saying we only had a program up to now, up to the 23rd. But this is the program for the whole of the session. And there's not very much we can do because we're working against time frames. If members feel that the program must be tweaked slightly, you can come to us and tell us. But in principle, we are adopting the program. Thank you very much. Then, honorable members, there was a letter that we had all agreed must go to the IEC. We tried to draft that letter. And we just thought that if you have a quick skills at it, and if you think that it covers most of the issues that we wanted the IEC to talk to, we'll sign it and send it off. You're giving us the authority to do that. Thank you very much. And then the last one, and some wise guys were saying to me, don't even raise it. but let me raise it, because if you throw it out, you throw it out. Between the time that we take draft number one to the public and they come back, we have to give them 3 weeks before they come back for us to take a decision. Is it advisable? Is it necessary? Is it not necessary for some of us, of all of us or whatever, to go and look at Ghana and wherever else to see how this thing is done? Or is that not necessary? That's the only question. If we think it's necessary, let's look at it. If we think it's absolutely not necessary, we can. That's the proposal we put in. And it can only happen whilst this committee is in sort of recess during when the bill goes out until it comes back. Should we have a sense of a country, not a country, and that type of, the principle? What do members think? Because if we want to, and the only reason we're raising it is because if we want to, we've got to start the process now. Time is against us. If we think that, look, it's not necessary, then we cannot. We haven't even identified the countries, but surely there's things like Ghana and Nairobi, not Nairobi, Kenya, in Uganda, and if you want to go to wherever. But I'm just saying the principle about it. Is it necessary? No. You don't want overseas. Not overseas. You don't want oversight of some sort. No. I am quite easy. Yes, no, then let's get it out of the agenda.
Thank you. I think if it's permissible and can be approved, I think it will give us a better sense of what we're trying to achieve. It might even get other ideas to enrich draft one by the time it's presented. But I think there's no problem with it. If they can permit it, let's try and make an application.
Any other views? Huh? Come ahead.
Thank you. I think the ANC submitted some models, a number of countries, particularly around Africa. I think with the assistance of perhaps people that have looked at this and are more expert at this, perhaps we could get an advice as to which country to go to. So in principle, my view is that let's get there, perhaps one or two countries, but it should be on an informed basis and not just any country.
What thing are you indicating?
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Kepis, Mr. Pagnus. Yeah, Chairperson, you know, I think we should just continue with our desktop exercise. we've had examples, you know, from some of the presenters that came here. And if it's absolutely essential, then 2-3 members of this committee, you know, we can get permission for them to go. But I don't think we're going to learn, well, we'll learn a lot, but I don't think it needs a face-to-face interaction flying off to another country. You mentioned Ghana. We're having difficulty to get there with the chief with the chief whips because they're not available until January. So, I mean, if Ghana is the target, then they're not going to meet us until January. But let's continue with our desktop exercise, as Honorable Kometa said, and see how far it takes us.
All right. Desktop exercise means there's no space what we need to do with the chief whip. I mean, that's basically, so it's fine. So it's off the table. All right. No. I hear what you're saying, but exploring, because of the time constraint, if you explore for longer than 2 or 3 days, I think we'll miss the window for all the reasons that you're saying. It's either you say now, do the necessary spade work, or we say we do desktop, because it's not like we're planning for 6 months ahead. We're planning for 10 days. Let's visit it. It will be in October. She says it only takes 3 months to do this application. So, what are you saying, Kopo?
But now, the summary we're giving is not what all the members are asking.
No, what is
my deduction is that we're saying do the spade work, where possible, let's get to that. But even Honorable Singh is saying it's Ghana that is not available. But in terms of what Honorable Kumati here, he says the ANC presented a lot of countries there that they were taking, this one does this. So those who are technical can just be able to check who is available, when, how, and what information can we get, and with the budgetary, all those things, then explore, we can go. It can only assist the process to the best interest of the people of this country and all of us.
We will do the necessary spade work and we'll motivate either way, whether it's yes or no. Honourable members, that then concludes what I'm hoping. In the exception of the first, this should be as close as possible to the draft that we're sending out. Our next meeting is on the 1st of September. We will meet the IEC and ask them to give us why they don't want to do or why they can. We're going to meet Treasury and SARS and anybody about all those things about what they come to do. And then we're going to finalize the issues we've raised, the 2 or 3 issues we've raised. Thereafter, Michael and them will put it into English. It'll come back to us just for our blessing before it goes out to the public via Parliament or whatever is required. For 3 weeks, we come back for phase two of our thing. I want to thank honourable members for at least the constructiveness in this process up to now. We will then meet again on the 1st. You'll get the notices, and the 1st should be the last political bite until it goes out. Or not until it goes out, until it comes back, our blessing. Thank you very much.